This is the November 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include from AgMarket.net, Wayne Nelson and Kurt Kimmel, along with from Grain Cycles, Dale Durkles. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the whole of the program online at willag.org. Just click and play, or look it up in your favorite podcast applications. Let's begin with the USDA reports as they were released from the United States Department of Agriculture for the month of November. They did make some changes, Kurt Kimmel, and it had a big move in the marketplace, particularly for corn. They added 1.9 bushels to the acre in yield, now at 74.9. That's about 170 million bushels of extra corn. What does it mean longer term in the marketplace?
Yeah, they found some extra bushels around. You get the Dakotas, they were up. Illinois is a little higher than last month. So a few more bushels, you know, almost 2 bushels per acre is kind of a big move, in my opinion. But what they did to offset, though, they did increase demand. They got demand fairly lofty, so demand needs to come through and pull the market higher in through here and offset that. But the total increase was 45 million bushels from last month. Not a big number. I mean, if it was 145 million bushels, I'd say, boy, watch out. But being over 2 billion, close to 2.2, has the market kind of on the defensive end through here. I think, though, short term here, we've hopefully got that priced in. We're still in the time window in here where the harvest is pretty well wrapped up. It's being socked away. What's probably been the biggest anchor outside this report, though, is visiting with producers clear across the Midwest. Just about everybody did a basis contract. And so, therefore, we have a lot of grain that's kind of in the commercial's hands. And, therefore, I think that's kind of keep a lid on things. But once we get that cleaned up here, we'll see what happens. But longer term, from here on out, we'll have to see what the quarterly grain stocks report shows. That'll give us a true indication of demand.
Dale Durkles, you're shaking your head along with the grain stocks number and the basis contracts that producers have put into place. Do you have some thoughts on this?
You know, when I look at the indications here, one thing we talked about before we came on the air, I talked about, you know, the increase actually came in implied ear weight, which really is a little bit unusual for November. And the last time we did this in January, it went down again. The stocks number that we'll get in January is really all important, because that really is the ultimate check on how many bushels are really there and available in looking backwards in here and looking at things done. But when you look across the board at the demand numbers the WASDE group put in, a little bit ethanol, a little bit of feed, and a little bit of exports. And exports you can kind of question, but I think it's probably legitimately there at this point. You know, one of the bigger problems I've said, you know, we have in the corn market at this point is just the wheat market continues to stay down at low prices and just kind of like a millstone around the neck of corn trade.
We'll come back to that in just a moment, but I do want to talk about these usage figures. 125 million bushels, 50 million in feed and residual. There was 50 million in the export market and 25 million in the ethanol side. Ethanol seems like it might be easy enough to get to, but the feed and residual numbers and the export numbers seem harder to think about, given how bad demand has been for corn, or bad's not the right word, how slow demand for corn has been.
Well, you're right, Todd. It has been very slow. You know, we've seen a little bit of bean export business done here as of late, but we just haven't seen stuff. One of the biggest problems we've had is the water in the Mississippi River and the Illinois River along the way. You know, we just haven't got corn down in exportable positions at the Gulf, and we've had barges not be able to load out, and we've got some sales maybe coming up there, but they're going to have to go for those. The farmers are, they had extra bushels this year in our area here in Illinois, 3 bushels more on this report, and we've got a lot of corn out there, a lot of corn that's still wet in bins and's got to move here pretty soon because the dryers just can't keep up. But, you know, as we look at that, we also look at the cattle price, and we're thinking that now it's taken a heck of a hit here lately. But, you know, a lot of guys are keeping a few more feeder cattle back, and we maybe will see a little extra feed that way. The hogs seem to be having a rough time, though, so I think we might gain in the cattle and lose in the hogs.
Yeah, on the livestock sector, if you know, soybean meal just went through the roof. We're seeing record meal sales. The meal number's probably too low, but what we're doing, though, on the corn side, DDGs are just unbelievable. These guys can't believe how far out they're booked on DDGs. And so that's been the alternative to the higher meal price. And so are we really crushing for ethanol, or are we crushing for DDGs? Then, too, we got a little corn oil thrown into the formula, too.
Well, along with the DDG thing, you know, you're going to rotate DDGs or a few more of those into the mix. But when you purely just step back and you look at the ratio between corn price and bean meal prices in here, it says I need to adjust my ration to get some bean meal out of it, and I'm going to bring corn into that ration somehow. If I bring it in as DDGs, I'm purely going to be bringing in some protein, but I can go back to actual physical corn and bring corn back into the ration, and we can do that so easily. So I think that, you know, when you look at the feed consumption number for corn, I can justify what they did. The other thing in there, and you alluded to it a little bit about hogs, if you go back to the last hog and pig report, you know, we didn't have anything exciting on the breeding herd number, but those pig production numbers were a lot better than people thought. And frankly, that's what eats the corn. It's the pigs that eat the corn, not the sows. So I can justify where they're at on their feed demand base. And they may be a little light.
Can you justify the 10-cent drop in the marketplace, given what you've been asking and talking about?
Today's 10-cent drop?
No, the long season's average cash price 10-cent drop.
Oh, I can probably justify that at this point in time, because that's purely a long-term model in the mix at this point, and that'll be adjusted as we go through time and cash prices physically unfold as we go through the marketing year. But I don't get excited about that in the short term, because I don't think that, in fact, impacts, you know, what we really see as one of the things driving the downside at this point. That's the money people. They have no reason to get out of their short positions.
Tell me about that. What does that mean? That's the money people. I heard all three of you discussing that and how a trade ensues throughout each and every business day.
Well, basically, they are short. They're looking ahead for the idea that the economy is going to slow down, and they want to be short the commodities along the way. You know, a lot of times we used to see a big influx of long-only funds. They've shrunk. I think about a third of them are not out there anymore, just because that just hasn't worked. And we've got these other guys, and the algorithm says, oh, well, this is going this way. The chart point says this. We broke through. We went down on two or three things because of chart points, you know, not really even supply demand anymore. And an algorithm's going to do that. We've watched this week, every morning until about noon, it looks like the market's going to stay, going to go. And by the time we close, it's red on the screen. And that is those people coming back to defend their positions.
I'm thinking about this just a little bit and wondering about the spreads in the marketplace, the carry in particular. And do you suppose that what you have just put forth keeps the front end higher as the deferreds need to be lower for the algorithms if their position really is recession?
You know, when you look at the spreads themselves, the really key behind it is going to be where we're going to be at going into first notice day for December at the end of the month. We have the DEES March spread out here at this point in time. You know, and if I were a commercial and end up giving corn delivered on top of me, why am I going to give it up? If I've got it in the bin, I can make good return on money having that corn in the bin, so I'm going to just hold it. So people are probably going to have the attitude, we're going to have big deliveries, and we could have, but I think on the other flip side of that, you got to look at the fact that, you know, even though you get big deliveries, that person that takes it might go, you know, it's good money just hanging on to it and rehedge it out there in the March. Now, at some point, that becomes a problem. In wheat, I've seen some return on investments that have been up in the teens on taking wheat delivery because of the spreads or where they're at. And that's really an attractive to hang on to the physical grain for these people. I'm speaking of commercials hanging on to it.
Yeah, I know. So what, if anything, should a producer take from this part of the conversation? What does it mean for their marketing plans?
Frankly, I'll put it this way. I don't think there's much downside risk, if any, in the market right now. What have I got to lose?
Okay. What's everybody else have to say, Kurt?
Amen.
That's it. We're done with the program for the day. Wayne, why don't you follow up here?
Well, I'll tell you what, Todd. There's, you know, right now we are starting to see a little bit of Chinese business come in. We're starting to see a few things happen. I think as we get the grain moving down the river, as we get that back up, I can tell you my friend Phil down in Arkansas, their basis on beans went from 30 under to 28 over. This week, let alone the increase in the bean price. Now we're talking about a lot of people got phone calls from their local cash merchandisers this week. We can give you $13 cash. I know that moved a lot of beans. The commercials are out there searching for beans. They don't narrow their bases that much just because they don't have anything out there just for the heck of it. So there's some business being talked about and stuff going on. You know, do we have a real good attitude towards a lot of this? You know, I am scared about some of the recession fears and some of the other things going on. And I mean, you know, the political attitude on a lot of things out here now is just nervous. Nervous is a good word, way to put this economy and what's going on. You know, we have to keep the feds from not raising rates again. You know, we were talking about carry and spreads and what going into it. What have we added to it this year? We have had just about zero interest on this to go. And now we're talking 3, 4, 5 cents a month. Interest is what you have to figure if you've got a note with the bank. And so, you know, look ahead at that and say, is it going to pay more than my interest to hold on to this? I know Dale thinks we can't go down much, but as you stop and think going steady, you're losing 5 to 6 cents interest a month.
Let's come back to your amen. I want to talk about some of the fundamentals in the marketplace that will work for both corn and soybeans, potentially to the upside, all out of South America, particularly out of Brazil, not Argentina at this point, but particularly out of Brazil. The southern part of that nation is soaked, is saturated, is flooded. I don't know that really generally has been a problem. The only year I can come up with is 1993, that's an awful problem here in the United States. I don't know what it means in southern Brazil. In the center west, in Mato Grosso, they have been moving along on their planting okay. However, a crop came up and then got burnt, apparently, and dry, and it looks like it's going to stay very hot. This, if it were to be replanted on either side, could have an impact on second crop or safrida corn. Now, USDA, in its numbers from the WASDE in November, did not change corn or soybean production for Brazil or Argentina. However, CONAB on Thursday morning did drop theirs to some extent. Is there something there for this marketplace to get hold of? I thought that's what it had been trading, although it appears it may have been trading, I don't know, the demand from China for soybeans over the last 2 weeks.
Well, you got to go back to the 70s and 80s when the first El Nino news came out, anchovies, fish meal, and so forth. And it just spells adverse weather. And we're seeing that happen. And of course, your weather guys are a lot more on top of it than I am. But this adverse growing conditions, it's set in. It's got straightened out here fairly quickly. But estimates are they're going to try maybe replant 20-25% of the crop and don't have a whole crop in yet. And so basically there's problems. And the bottom line is I believe we've probably seen the highest production estimates out of that southern hemisphere at this time. Because as you move forward in through here, you're going to, like you mentioned, back up some other crops, the corn coming in. Then if you go to cotton, that's more full season. So there's a lot of moving parts in that southern hemisphere that spells maybe a little less production than what the trade has dialed in.
You know, right now when you look at Brazil, and we're real wet in the southern half, and you don't know where that's going to, how that's going to shake out yet. But when we look at the dryness in Mato Grosso and those other northern states where all the expansion has taken place, what we're starting to hear at this point is that people that are going to go back in and do some replant are not all going to replant beans, are going to replant into some cotton. And if I replant acres to cotton, that kind of cuts into the impact of having second crop corn on those acres too. I can't do that. And the beans, because we're starting to get into a factor here in those northern areas of being somewhat delayed, even if we end up producing a reasonable crop up in that area, you have to start to think about harvest being delayed. If that happens, then you delay second crop corn planting, which puts that corn production into a more risky period as far as weather down in South America. You look down at Argentina, you're starting to hear stories at this particular point about producers down there are foregoing first planting of corn. They plant two corn crops, an early and a late crop. They're starting to forego that early corn crop because of the dry weather conditions. May mean some more beans come down in there. So I think we could still see a good bean crop out of there. Corn is a little bit more questionable. But I think this whole thing, when you look at South America as far as beans, I think that we might have seen roughly about the largest number we're going to see. But in corn, I think we start to really have to draw some questions. What's that second crop corn going to be like? And we're going to have a whole winter of doubt about that, and we really aren't going to know anything until we get into March, April.
I want to stay with you for just a second because you've been itching to talk about wheat, and I want to hear what you have to say. Sounds like a wet blanket on the marketplace, I guess, from your perspective, but I don't know whether that's really the case.
Well, wheat prices are staying weak, and when you have wheat stay weak, what you end up doing is that you basically siphon away some of your corn demand as far as the feed market, whether it's here in the U.S. or whether it's out in the world, too. You really have to look at that. And in the world, we have countries that are big feeders of wheat. So we've got to get the wheat turned around. You look at FOB prices. Russian wheat is still the cheapest wheat in the world FOB trade and continues to leak a little bit lower. And yeah, they had a second good crop in a row, not exceptional like the one we had a year ago. But at some point, the rate they're shipping, we're going to run out of that. But I think the one thing, and Wayne mentioned it here too, but I'll look at it on a worldwide basis. The one thing is, you know, you look at these commodity prices in general and you think about weak economies, but I wonder if we're worried a little bit about weak world economies and starting to see some weakness on this demand base too. And wheat, because it's a food grain, really is on the forefront of some of that as well. I don't have a good answer to that. I just have a question.
We'll come back to you and see why it is you don't think there's downside or very much downside risk in the commodity markets after that discussion point. Maybe it's just down on the bottom, but I'll let you get to it in a moment. So I do want to come back and talk with the both of you from the perspective of the producer as it relates to the commercial side, whatever they've got stored at this point in the grain elevator, priced or unpriced or basis contracts, whatever it happens to be. What should they do with corn and soybeans?
Well, I think we're going to see something here. By the next week, we're going to get a little better idea how harvest is winding up and what's going on. I think that it's not going to be the time to do anything much in the next 2 weeks because everybody is going to try, at least in our area here, is trying to be finishing up. And there's lines upon lines out there trying to get dumped. You don't pay a high basis when everybody wants just a place to get dumped. I think after a couple of weeks, say the 1st of December, I think that we'll see basis tighten in. I think we'll see a better price for these farmers. I think that, you know, we're already seeing it down the Mid-South. I think, you know, as we talked about the bean basis coming in, I think that we'll see that happen and start to happen. And I'm going to tell them if you put it in, you paid your minimum storage or done whatever, that I'm waiting until probably the 1st of December to do any pricing.
Amen a second time. I tell you, it's... Yeah, guys aren't going to do anything. They pay minimum storage. They're not going to move it. I've only seen one time, maybe two times, where you fill up your bin, you empty it right away. So they're locked down. They're waiting. On the commercial side, listen to the commercial guys talk. They're a little edgy or nervous here. They're wanting to get stuff bought here in the next 2-3 weeks. So I think you got to pay attention here. As long as they're still interested in buying something for the next 2 or 3 weeks, that puts us in the time window. Wendell mentioned first to Wayne mentioned there, 1st of December. So any type of moving through there, I think you need to get caught up to get to where you want to be.
Will farmers see the overs at this point, do you think, in that? Can we move basis that much? Because it doesn't feel like the futures market's going to give them that pop.
Well, I think you've already seen that in some areas already, kind of a basis push. We're seeing piles picked up that's been put down in some areas already. And so I think we're seeing that materialize here. Now, the question is, after the first year, are we going to see another round of grain movement or not? But until we get to January 1 and see what that South American weather is, producers probably going to be a tight holder here as we move forward. One thing to remember, though, crop insurance is done with. Now we get back to 490, that's where it kind of, or 488, that's kind of where the corn went off. That's going to be the first step here, get back to square one.
Tell me a little bit about the cycles you've been watching, if you've been watching at this point, and where they stand.
Beans are probably the easiest at this point. We can go back into the low we had here just a few weeks ago. Looked like it was a 32-week low. Also, that looks like it was a three-year low. So I see the bean cycles as having turned up at this point in time. So you know, we're still in the early process even of the 32-week cycle, so there's still some question. Corn is kind of funny. You look back at the low we had back in September on the Deese contract or any individual contract, that looked like it counted out as a 20-week low. We could also, and cash it did too, we could also go back and look at last summer on the nearby chart and say the 20-week low was there. Well, we're roughly 10, 11 weeks out from that. We're about 7 weeks out from the last low on D. So in the interim, we ought to be having some kind of a low here in the very short term. But with the corn market, the thing that you kind of worry a little bit about, I've really got the way my count is, a 40-week low coming out here sometime in the early middle part of January. So you think about that crop report coming out there. Back into a bigger picture, looking at commodity indices and also looking at crude oil. Seasonally, crude oil we know is somewhat weak into the beginning of the calendar year. But crude oil and commodity indices both have a three-year low that look like they bottomed last summer. And I think that's a big thing I go home thinking about, in that there's something still brewing that's going to give us another pop generally in commodity prices along the way. And if that's going to be the case, corn and beans and wheat even will probably tend to follow along with that. And I keep in the back of my mind, isn't it funny right now? We have a conflict going on in Russia, Ukraine. We're seeing problems develop in the Middle East. When do commodities go down in war? They don't. And you really kind of worry about some of these developments as they're unfolding in the Middle East, because Iran is starting to push the button a little bit harder on the U.S. at this point in time, as well as even Israel. And, you know, you wonder if we aren't going to get into a bit broader conflict, you know, and if things tend to escalate a little bit. You don't want to be short commodities, especially food-type commodities, in that kind of an environment.
So how do producers manage this kind of risk? There's reward there, potentially. But that reward has to do with lots of outside influences, war, price of crude oil, but not particularly the fundamentals of the marketplace. So then that's a whole different paper position, I think, or a different way to think about this marketplace. They could just wait, but then their risk is open. And so probably I'm guessing that you have some strategies where they might be able to manage some of this risk.
Yeah, you just go to agmarket.net, click on Intel. You go to Intel. Then when you go to the broker part, click Wayne's name. He'll answer your questions on that. But no, that's a great point, because basically the old crop's underwater, new crop's above water for right now. And our approach has been basically covered positions. Put price floors in if you want to hang on to the cash grain. That way basis firms up or something blows up overseas at 2:30 in the morning when you're going to the bathroom, you see it. Yeah, you've got some coverage. I think of all years, this is sort of a covered strategy type of scenario. I think you need to take a look at it. It don't cost that much to do it.
Anything you learned from dealing through the elevator system for decades that you can help producers think about how to manage not commercial stored grain, but that which they have in the bin?
Well, I think that we talked a lot about here. Dale said it, Curtis sort of said it, and I sort of said along the way that you generally see the basis levels come back in. I think depending on your cash flow and what you're looking at, you know, we want to wait till sometime that December bump up in basis levels before we sell anything more, any cash stuff. Now, if you're in good financial shape, you got to remember your stuff costs you money to hold. But if you really feel some of these things can happen, we're putting puts below the market. And, you know, like I say, and if you want to, well, we can, you can buy a call out there and sell a call above it if you want to really play double. But if you're just protecting what you got in storage and you really think we can come back on some of this stuff, but be alert. Remember, you can do a basis contract if it really narrows in and does something, and you can leave the pricing open if you want to and still use that, keep that put in place to ride it.
See, that's one thing you got to think about at this particular juncture, and I'm going to speak generalistically because I don't watch a market every day. When you have a market, the basis ends up a little bit on the wide side or getting out to normal levels, and you think there's going to be some improvement coming on basis levels, and also a market where you have the kind of carries what we have in the corn market right now. Basis contracts really work well when you look out at a distant month. But at some point, you have to manage those basis contracts by putting some kind of an option strategy in place. And I think you can do it probably, I think, with options. I would go with some kind of a bull call spread, you know, if I were putting on a basis contract, just to kind of cut down my cost of putting those option positions in place at this point. But basis contracts with wide basis, good carries, you know, you sell them in March and May delivery, and, you know, you just sit there and, you know, you collect the money on that basis, that cash market coming to that futures. And then you got to manage that futures component of it.
Now tell me about the wheat market as you view it.
The wheat market, when you look back at the broad fundamentals, whether you look at the world as a whole or the world outside of China, we're tighter than we were a year ago. We're still some of the tightest levels. We go back into when we were back in, what, 07, 08, and some years like that when we're extraordinarily tight. We don't have a huge surplus of wheat around anywhere in general. You know, I look at the cyclic patterns in wheat. A year ago, we had a six-year low put in. This year, it still looks like, you know, we've put a nine-year low in the wheat market. So to me, it says there isn't any downside. But the weakness we continue to see in this game, you know, just kind of makes me scratch my head a little bit at this juncture. But fundamentally, wheat's arguably actually the best commodity of the three grains. And yet the market can't move. And that really is the one that's really telling me, do we have something going on economically around the world that we just haven't appreciated at this point yet? I don't know. But I don't see a lot of downside risk in the wheat market at these kind of price levels, and especially when it looks like we've put some cyclic parameters behind us. What we're really waiting on is some kind of a news event to get people interested in playing alongside. About 3 weeks ago, I had a longtime friend of mine that works for one of the big hedge funds, big one. And he said, Dale, tell me about what you're seeing in the wheat market. He was looking for a reason and a way to get long. Just didn't see it. And I said, you know, I'm not a bear, and that's about all I can tell you at this point in time.
What do you think about the big double top in the long-term chart?
Of?
Wheat.
What big double top?
Well, if you pull a long-term chart off of wheat, it's got a huge double top in it, which are made to break. I think that might be one of the first things you say, but it's just there and easy to see.
Are you talking about the one from 2 years ago?
No.
It's a longer term. Like a 10-year chart.
Like,
we're a long way from big highs in wheat.
Yeah, I know. Yes.
I'm not saying we're going back to those kinds of prices, but I'm also saying we're not going to stay at 5.5. That's the big point. You know, we can easily, you know, with change the complexion of the wheat market a little bit, I can go back to 8.5, 9.5 real quick. And that has a lot of impact on what happens in the corn market too. And a lot of people just don't appreciate, you know, wheat and corn and that relationship. And it's really so important. But I just don't see the downside risk of wheat when we're playing 5.5 already, or something close to it.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. I'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of agmarket.net.
Well, I think what Dale said about the wheat's very true. Remember, wheat is a food grain and a feed grain. And depending on what price it is, whether it goes back and forth and comes out and is and does let corn go up if it gets back into the food grain part of it. So I think that's what he's got something there that we're talking about and can happen. To do this, we're going to need to pull some of that wheat back in there to put it in the food category. I think that we've got a real opportunity to see some basis narrowing here over the next 3 weeks, and it might be a time to price some grain.
Kurt Kimmel?
Probably keep an eye on the meal oil spread. One of these days, I'll flip the other way. We'll get the TT going again here on that. World rice production is up a little bit, but world rice ending stocks are down. World sugar supplies are lower, so some of these outside markets are worth watching. But probably the thing, too, as we go in the weekend here, a big shout-out to all the veterans that served our country.
And finally, Dale Dirkholz.
You know, I keep going back. You know, I still think we put in a 3-year, 39-month low in commodity indices, crude oil, too, last summer, you know. And so what we're going through here at this point is generally still the earlier part of some kind of an upswing in terms of broad commodity prices at this juncture. So I look at the markets we're going to have in corn and wheat and even beans to a degree coming a little bit later and being a little bit more of a longer term thing. And I'm talking about into late winter and maybe into early spring, and then we'll see where we're at. Beans are the one that could come a little bit sooner than everything else simply because of the dynamics of South America.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles, Wayne Nelson of agmarket.net, and Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.